With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle.
Hey everyone, welcome into the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, joined as always by Mike Tagliere. Give us a follow on Twitter if you don't already at Bobby Fantasy Pro and at Mike Tagliere NFL. Tags, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, nothing much, man. It's good to have you back on the show. It's Friday. I am going to be talking some football with two of my favorite people in the world, so it's a good day.
Yeah, and we've got a great guy, Joe Pizzapia. You guys know him. You guys were probably hoping he was going to be the guest on today's show. He's at Joe Pizzapia 17, author of the number one best-selling fantasy black book series. And guess what? It just came out. It's already number one on Amazon. Joe, congratulations, man.
Well, I want to thank, first of all, I want to thank all the my parents and all the people behind me all this time. I just want to say a lot goes into this sort of thing when you're trying to make a book special. Oh, wait, they're playing me off. They're playing me off. No, it's wild. Like, we've hit number one in football books before. Like, we always hit number one in fantasy. That's my expectation. I mean, come on. If we're not hitting number one in fantasy, what the hell are we doing here? But to hit number one in football books the first week of June when we come out, like, we're ahead of James Conner's book and all these other books, like actual football players, that's wild to me. And I just want to thank...
He's got, like, a picture of his big muscles and stuff on
him. Yeah, well, apparently my muscles are bigger than his.
Like, did you do that? Is that why it's selling so well?
You know what? I should do a cover with me flexing like that, too. Not quite as big as James Conner's bicep, I could tell you that.
It would not be number one.
No, they're not bad, Dags. They're not bad, but they're not James Conner level. I'm telling you that right now. But it is... I just want to thank everybody who went out there early and were waiting for the book and got it early. And just like that's amazing. And of course, I'm very lucky to have you two beautiful people contributing this year into the
thanks, man.
It was fantasy expert panel there and kind of join us. It's great because I feel like, you know, we are that independent voice where there's a lot of big box fantasy stuff going on at the ESPNs and the CBSs and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Like, there's a lot of great independent football analysts out there, and I like giving them a platform, and I like creating something for them and something that's for the people to use, not just for everybody to spout opinions. Like, Black Book is about your fantasy team. It's about your usage of things. It's about your leagues and trying to run everything from high stakes to best ball to your super flex, everything. Whereas a lot of other stuff out there is about, look at me, look at my opinion. I'm a smart fantasy analyst, and I got, you know, that's just not going to get people very far.
Well, here's the plan for today's show. Not only do we have Joe on the show, but we're going to be talking breakouts. Everyone's favorite topic, right, guys?
Well, it's a very loose topic.
You don't think so, man? Everyone loves breakouts. Man, these are the league winners, baby.
We do, but here's the thing. I am such a realist when it comes to fantasy football, and, like, you know, I deal with projections all the time.
You're locked inside a box. Bobby, it what it is, dude.
This is Bobby's show, 100%, because Bobby is the hot take artiste of
the
show.
This isn't about hot takes. It's about what could happen, what could win your league. You know, like Dalvin Cook last year, when I demanded people draft him, Christian McCaffrey the year before, when I demanded people draft him, Dad's bet against Christian McCaffrey. Dude, this is your chance to win the league.
Well, Tags won a lot of leagues. Let me tell you something. Tags came on my show. I did shows with him here where we talked about, like, bold predictions and things like that. And I'm going to give him credit because he was the guy last year saying Aaron Jones is going to finish as an
RB1.
Right. And you were saying it everywhere. And you said on my show, you said it here. And so, you know, so that counts. Like, that was a breakout, you know. So you could do a victory lap. And if you don't want to, I'll you know, put you on my shoulders and carry around the
what tripod. A hot take, Tags. Holy cow, man. I can't believe you said Aaron Jones would be an RB1 last year.
You did.
He's like the king of hot takes.
Yeah, no, I'm the king of hot takes. Yeah. A third or fourth round running back that I said would go first round this year. And he's not going first round, and that's not due to his play. It has to do with Matt LaFleur and how much of a dummy he is.
Yeah. Cram it in your cram hole, LaFleur.
But yeah, we're gonna try and nail some of those guys in today's show.
Yeah, so we're going to start out with the breakout running backs. These are guys who could finish. Right now, they're going in the top 60 overall picks, okay? They could jump up to that first or second round value, depending on where they're being drafted right now. Tags, we're going to get to yours in just a second. First, though, I want to tell you guys we've got two giveaways going on right now. We're giving away a Fielder's Choice wallet. It's made out of a vintage baseball glove. You guys are going to absolutely love this wallet. I got one for my dad for Father's Day. We're also giving away a full-sized DeAndre Hopkins Cardinals helmet. If he helped you win your fantasy league, or if you're a Cardinals fan who's super pumped, or if you just enjoy listening to the show, submit an entry for this contest. What you have to do is you have to go to Stitcher or Apple Podcasts, leave a review, take a screenshot of that review, and send it to us at contest@fantasypros.com. And if you want to check out the details, it's at fantasypros.com/contest. Tags, why don't you start us off? Who do you see it being?
My pick to be the Aaron Jones this year is Kenyon Drake.
Dog, you jerk.
We should have let the guest go first. I don't know what I was thinking.
No. This is good. This is good because it's funny. We never do this. We never compare notes before we come on the show. And I think this is great. Like when all of us agree, because we all have like very informed opinions, I think it's really cool that, you know, like we're all on the same page about something. I think that speaks volumes to it. So go ahead, speak volumes.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Drake. And like, so when we first started doing like all the offseason shows and I saw Drake's ADP sitting around RB 14, RB 15, I didn't really understand it. And I said that I would take him as a top 10 running back in redraft leagues. And then it moved all the way up to the point where I said, if you wanted to take him as the number 6 running back overall, I'd have no issue with it. And I still stand that way just because I feel like he's tied to an offense that Cliff Kingsbury, he wanted to run a lot of plays last year. Unfortunately, his offense wasn't extremely efficient. You know, you had the defense couldn't keep any, they couldn't stay at the field basically. So they were not running those plays that you wanted to. Those, you know, I know he said 80 plays per game, but realistically, I think it's a realistic outcome where they could shoot for 68, 70 plays per game. And that adds a ton of play opportunity. Kenyon Drake, once he came to the offense, he obviously highlighted the fact that he can play there, finished as the number 4 running back from when he arrived. And the fact that they shipped off David Johnson basically said that we're ready to ride Kenyon Drake. He's on a 1-year deal basically under this transition tag, and he's playing for another contract. He only has, I think, 400 something career carries under his belt, so he's not used and abused. He's a young running back. He's just fantastic. He fits this system extremely well. And now with DeAndre Hopkins, there is no way that defenses can come at this team and say, we're going to load the box. Kenyon Drake is the last of their concerns, basically, when you have Kyler Murray out there who can run the ball. You have Fitz as a possession style guy. Christian Kirk can do a lot of things. And you have DeAndre Hopkins, who's just, well, he's one of the best receivers in the NFL. So you want to tie yourself to these high-scoring offenses, and Kenyon Drake, again, I can make the case for him being the number 6 running back off boards. And if you want to take him at the end of the first, top of the second, I have no issue with it.
Fast pace, too. And right now his ECR is 21, so that's overall, not for running backs. He's running back number 11, so he's probably going to be going near the end of the second, early third round. Now, Joe, you were going to say Kenyon Drake as well.
Yeah, I was, and I've been a Kenyon Drake guy for years now, and it has not been pretty. Let me tell you, I've taken a lot of abuse, and it's worse because you get like those teases where they like Adam Gase would let him play.
Yep.
And you see him, you go, well, why isn't this guy carrying the ball all the time? And then, you know, we kind of went through this in a way before with Lamar Miller. I think Drake is a different kind of talent, obviously. But, you know, Miller was, the usage was weird. And the next thing he goes, and oh, look, he's in the Texans now. And he's, you know, going for 1,000-yard seasons, basically. And he's very productive RB2. Well, isn't that funny? You just kind of, you know, leave him alone and let him do his thing. But Drake, I thought, had a lot of talent. And I just don't get it. Like, I don't know if he was a bad clubhouse guy. I don't know whatever it is. Or was just Adam Gase just, you know,
being Adam Gase.
That's what I would imagine. And Elliot Chris agrees with me too. And Elliot, formerly of TQE, big DFS guy, he did the running back profiles in the Black Book, and he came up with some great nuggets there too. And, you know, I always consult with everybody as we kind of put these things together in the Black Book. And some of the things he came up with, which was awesome, like he scored 14 or more PPR points in 4 of 8 games. And also he was pointing out that Cardinals offense, as Mike was kind of alluding to, gives you a fair amount of really fine running back performances. You know, even David Johnson had two finishes in the top five certain weeks. So that's something to keep in mind as well, that, you know, the Cardinals produced six top 5 weeks for running backs across 16 games and three different running backs. And from the time he got there on, I understand he had a couple bigger games, but at the same time, when you're talking about volume, when you're talking about volume of the offense, when you're talking about a guy who can catch the ball at the backfield, and now you've added a legitimate wide receiver in his prime in DeAndre Hopkins, I think that can only help a guy like Kenyon Drake. And I just think this is a unique opportunity, like Mike said, where there's a lot of people who doubt, a lot of people who aren't ready to buy in, who might want to, that this is your last opportunity to kind of get him at a value, because I think the ROI is fantastic this year in 2020.
Are you guys ready for my pick? It's going to make you laugh. You are going to be astonished.
Kalen Ballage. No.
Here's my big hot take. The name I wrote down was Kenyon Drake.
No, was it really?
That's all awesome. Three of us wrote down Kenyon Drake. It's Kenyon Drake, guys.
Well, I think all three of us in the Black Book did AJ Green, too, for, like, the guys being undervalued the most at wide receiver.
Hold on. We're getting there. We're getting there. Oh, well, I don't know if he can really be a breakout since he's 31
years old. No, he can't,
but
undervalued. I thought it was funny. Yeah. Like, everybody submits them, and then we assemble them, and I'm looking, and I was like, well, that's funny.
Every single person put AJ Green, right? I'm not going to add on to Kenyon Drake. You guys covered everything. I will say, it's not Miles Sanders. Everyone thinks Miles Sanders has this, like, elite upside. Yeah, if Doug Peterson, like, gets hit by a bus, he's not going away.
Hold on a second. I'm starting to buy into this a little bit more.
Oh, Tags.
No. The reason I am is because I really did think that Philadelphia was going to add another running back. If they go into the season with just the guys on the roster that they have right now, I'm buying in. I would draft Miles Sanders ahead of someone like Josh Jacobs, 100%. I'm not going to take him over Kenyon Drake, but I would be moving Miles Sanders up my draft rankings, because as I've ranked them now, I keep anticipating them to sign a running back, whether it's LeSean McCoy, Devonta Freeman. I don't know.
I'm with you, Tex. I'm going to support you. I'm going to hold your hand through this because I'm with you. The fact that they haven't gotten they didn't get Carlos Hyde. They're not, like, so far, at least anyway, they didn't get that guy, quote unquote. And Boston Scott's there, and I get that. And yeah, he'll have a couple series or whatever, and that's cool. Like, I don't expect Miles Sanders to be carrying the ball 25 times, but Miles Sanders is efficient. And I think that there's something to be said for that. I think we're getting to an age where we have to pay more attention to efficiency, because everybody's got less touches. So if everybody's gonna have less touches, efficiency all of a sudden should become valued more.
Look, guys, I'm telling you right now, even if they don't get LeSean McCoy or Devonta Freeman, if they go out and they get Doug Martin or Alfred Morris, Miles Sanders still isn't touching the ball 16 times a game.
Well, those guys are dead, so I don't...
Yeah, I understand they're dead, but Doug Peterson doesn't care. He is never going to have a workhorse running back.
But Doug Peterson also didn't have a young running back of this nature. Like, we've gone through...
The closest thing we saw was Ryan Matthews. And Ryan Matthews was towards the end of his career, too.
And he had some fumble issues.
But he was highly efficient.
We had Jay Ajayi in this mix. Yeah. We had, like... I mean, I'm trying to remember some of the guys.
LeGarrette Blount, Jordan Howard, those were the other ones.
Yeah, like, but Blount was at the... I mean, talk about the
power
very
backs.
End.
Those are power backs. That's, like, Miles Sanders is a legit superstar. But
he's great. The offensive line is great. But what is his upside if he only gets, you know, 290 touches?
Well, 290 touches is quite a bit.
I mean, that's quite a bit, but he's not going to be the RB 1, 2, or 3.
If I get 290, I'm drafting him as a top 12 back for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Everyone thinks he can be that RB 1, 2, or 3. You know who can be? I'll say this, okay? So we can have a different name out there instead of just Kenyon Drake. Joe Mixon right now is going as RB 7. Wouldn't it shock me at all if he finished the year as the number one running back?
The offense really needs to take a step forward for that to happen, to have more scoring opportunities. And I'm not saying it's not possible, because Mixon is a true three-down back. He's elite in terms of talent. The offense is going to be completely underrated. I think we all agree on that. But again, you have to have him more involved in the passing game for him to get there. And he hasn't been.
I agree. And he can be. It's just a matter of whether or not they flip on that switch.
Oh, 100%.
I would say his ceiling is fourth overall.
Mixon?
Yeah. Fourth overall running back? Yeah. Like, I think that's, like, I could see that. You know, I mean, I'm not going to put him with Saquon and Elliott and McCaffrey just because those guys are the, you know, just incredible focal points of their offenses to just like the nth degree. But I think, I mean, I don't know about one overall. I think that's a hot take, but I don't think it's a hot take to say fourth. Like, that's very reasonable if, like Mike's saying, if everybody you know, kind of gets on board there. And also the defense stinks, which means the offense is going to be continuously on the field. That's a good thing for fantasy.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have so much Joe Mixon this year. I'm taking him over Derrick Henry.
I think it depends on where you're drafting. Because if you land at number 6 overall in your draft, you're not getting Mixon. If you land, let's be realistic. If you land at number 8 in your draft, anywhere 1 through 8, you're not going to get Mixon because you have to take him at that number 8 pick. And someone will take him between 9 and 12 or 12 back down to 9.
Why would I not take him at the 8 pick?
You would
take him. I'm taking him over Henry. I'm taking him over any wide receiver not named Michael Thomas.
Oh, okay. So that's, I didn't know you'd do that. Like, I didn't know. I wouldn't take him over Devontae Adams. Julio Jones is probably a guy that I might take over Joe Mixon.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd take him at 8. His ADP right now is 11.
In the full point PPR, I would still take Julio too, but I don't know. If you're getting into the halves, that's where I start to...
It's close for sure.
It's getting closer. I think it's getting closer. And I think this year you can look at that wide receiving group there. And the wide receivers that kind of slip into that second and third round and go, okay, well, let me get Mixon and solidify that. Because then you start to get a little dicey with the Chubbs of the world. It's like, okay, well, what's with him and Kareem Hunt and how's that going to work? And, you know, so Mixon's kind of like one of those last standalone guys with Henry where you can, you know, get your guy, quote unquote.
Right. Let's go top 60, outside the top 60 for running backs, guys who could break out. I'm not saying become an RB1, but someone along those lines.
Yeah, I'm going to let Joe go first in this one.
All right, well, look, I'm not giving up on this guy yet like everybody else seems to want to, and it's Devin Singletary. And I've seen him kind of, that's fine, we could fight about this. We all agreed, now we're all fighting. See, now everything's back to normal.
To normal?
Thank goodness. There we go. But here's the thing, it's about efficiency again, right? And I mean, that's one thing to keep in mind. I know he only scored 4 touchdowns last year. I get the touchdowns are a problem. But in the same time, he... You know, with everything going on, he still almost finished as a fantasy RB2 despite missing all that time, despite having almost no touchdowns there. I'm aware of Zach Moss. I get it. But I think this is going to be a very difficult year with everything going on for rookie running backs to get out of the gate with just explosive and fantastic and take away jobs. And Devin Singletary was a guy that I think when you watched him play last year, he made the most of the opportunities he got early on. I remember that week 1 game against the Jets where they hardly gave him a ball. And then all of a sudden the 4th quarter, he's running like crazy and he just completely changed that game and brought Buffalo back into that game. And it was incredible to watch. And I got very excited. I was like, wow, this is really something. And then of course the injury happened, but look, Frank Gore's not there anymore. I think in terms of being highly efficient and catching passes as well. And look, Moss has been injured in his career too, so there's no like lock on him. So I think the ceiling is high for Singletary, and I think the point is the stock is low. When the ceiling is high and the stock is low, I always think that's a good combination. If it's wrong, it's not going to crush you.
So first, Joe, you cheated. He's going 53 overall. And
oh, I'm sorry. You know what? In the original thing where I was looking at before you told me to change it, he was 68, I think.
Well, I'm seeing 63 in ECR because the experts are lower on Singletary than the general public, which is usually a bad sign.
Yeah, but
I'll give you another one after if you want. Go ahead. I'll do extra credit.
I want to explain the reason that I'm down on Singletary. And I do like Zach Moss for what it's worth. I like him as a player. I think he's fantastic. He reminds me a lot of Kareem Hunt. However, I'm not going to say that he's going to be the number one back. They're going to use him in the Frank Gore role. Gore averaged up and through week 12. I think Frank Gore averaged 12 carries per game. He was getting the goal line work. Josh Allen steals goal line work. Here's a fun fact. I was on a Buffalo radio station yesterday, and we were talking about Devin Singletary and Zach Moss, and I said, Moss is walking into that Frank Gore role. They've already talked about the fact that they're bringing him in to take those goal line carries. He's going to do the short yardage work, and that is a very valuable role, and we saw it with Frank Gore last year. He ranked 12th in the NFL among running backs with red zone with carries inside the 5-yard line. Devin Singletary had 2 carries inside the 5-yard line, and those hosts out there in Buffalo, they knew exactly when they happened. There was a game against Washington, and they said it was in the same game that he got him, and it was a blowout win. It didn't even matter. They do not trust Devin Singletary and his juke style on the goal line. They want a bruiser, and that's why they drafted. When you draft a running back in the 3rd round, you clearly have a purpose. You have a role for him, especially for a team that has a great defense, one that wants to run the football. Singletary is going to be fine, but the fact of the matter, he doesn't get the carries when they matter most. Here's what I have for you. A carry outside the red zone is worth 0.64 fantasy points. That's what they're on average they are worth. A carry inside the 5-yard line on average is worth 2.09 fantasy points. So if he's not getting those carries when they're worth 4 times as much, it doesn't matter. He's basically a low upside running back. He's going to be safe. I do believe that he's going to live up and finish with that low end RB2, those RB2 numbers. But I don't think he has upside to be a breakout star where he's going to be a top 12 running back because
Agreed,
he just doesn't
exactly.
score the touchdowns.
Well, I think he's a quality pick. The only point I'm going to make about that in some of those stats is you have to be on the field to get those opportunities. And that is the one thing he missed a significant chunk of time. So you're not wrong in what you're saying. That's absolute fact. The thing we don't know, and again, I'm rolling the dice here a little bit, is, yeah, maybe Zach Moss is that guy, but if he puts the ball on the floor once or twice in a preseason, that's going to change the dynamic quite a bit very quickly. And also, what are these guys going to be doing, and how will they pick up playbooks without OTAs and without the normal amount of practice, or how that basically affects the first half of the season? I'm trying to get off to a 6-2 start, not a 2-6 start, and that's what I'm looking to do. And I kind of feel the same way. Like I acquired Miles Sanders last year in almost every league in the trade deadline, and it was a very good thing that I did because he had a very good second half. And I think a lot of these rookies, I would rather acquire. I'll give you a name outside of too that I've got a close eye on, even though he is a rookie, just because I think it's a wide open situation, is Cam Akers. Just because I'm not sold on anybody there, so I'm not saying
I'm especially
star.
Not sold on the offensive line though.
I mean, that's fair, but like somebody's got to carry the football there, and I don't know who it's going to be. And right now, according to this, he's in the 80s, and I'm actually surprised he's 81 on this sheet right here. So that's another guy that I would look at and I say, look, just for sheer volume, potentially that could be a guy as well that could break out. And I would say breakout, I don't know if he's going to become an RB1, but, you know, I think he could go well, you know, in terms of outperforming ADP. And I think that's what we're looking at. When I consider breakout, that's what I think of.
Tegs, we're going to get to yours in just a second. Father's Day is right around the corner, and we've got the perfect gift for the baseball-loving father in your life. A Fielder's Choice Goods wallet, handcrafted from vintage baseball glove leather. It smells awesome. I got one from my dad, and he absolutely loves it. Fielder's Choice Goods sources vintage baseball gloves from across the U.S., hand cuts each one individually, then combines it with premium quality full grain steer hide with relentless attention to detail. The result is a beautiful, functional, artisan quality product that celebrates the legacy of our shared pastime with every single use. It's not just a wallet, it's a conversation piece too. Since every glove is different, no two wallets are the same. Yours will be literally the only one of its kind in existence. Visit fcgoods.com and use the discount code FANTASYPROS, all one word, at checkout for a special offer. They're going to custom monogram your wallet for free. That's going to save you $25 while you make the perfect gift that much more personal. Order now to get it in plenty of time for Father's Day, or heck, forget your dad and just grab one for yourself. The most beautiful, functional accessory you'll ever own. Again, that's fcgoods.com and use the discount code FANTASYPROS at checkout.
All right, Tex, who do you have for us? Don't steal my guy.
I was actually thinking about stealing your guy because I know exactly who it is.
Of course you do.
I'm going to skip over him. I'm just.
But
gonna
do
go
you like him? You would consider saying him?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a breakout, because the thing is, the truth of the matter is, when you're looking outside the top 60, the odds are really stacked against you to find a running back, because we know the guys that are going to get opportunity.
Unless an injury. Like, four of these guys are going to break out because of an injury, but you can't predict that.
Exactly. We can't predict injuries, right? So you're looking for guys that could do it without injury, and there's two guys that jumped to the top of my list that could do it without injury. And one is your guy. The other one is Ronald Jones. Ronald Jones is a guy that, you know, with Tom Brady coming to town, that offense is going to move a bit smoother. Bruce Arians showed last year that he can kind of adapt to whoever his quarterback is and their play style. Ronald Jones, I think people forget, towards the end of last year, I remember watching the team and thinking, like, he was playing fantastic at the end of the year. And I understand that Bruce Arians never fully trusted him, that he was in and out of the lineup. He was mixing carries with Peyton Barber. But don't think that he's all of a sudden going to trust some rookie coming in that he drafted in the third round that he wasn't particularly excited about, and Keyshawn Vaughn. Keyshawn Vaughn, I don't know where the reputation came from, where all of a sudden people are saying that he is a guy that catches a ton of passes. I really don't. I mean, when people were it was almost like you would think he was James White with the way that people were talking about Keyshawn Vaughn as a pass catcher. He's not. He's very similar to Ronald Jones,
he's
in a lot of
kind
ways.
Kind of a mauler.
Yeah, he's Jones 2.0.
There's nothing exceptional about what he does. I didn't like Keyshawn Vaughn in the scouting process. I think Ronald Jones is going to be just fine. That offensive line has been upgraded a ton, and I do believe that Bruce Arians wants to give his veteran the opportunity to win that job, and Ronald Jones, I think, can win that job. I think he's a good enough running back to get it done. I'm not saying he's elite, but when you play for an offense that's going to be top 12 in scoring, there's going to be some opportunity there for you. Now, again, there's a reason he's going as late as he is in drafts, because there's some uncertainty around him and Keyshawn Vaughn, the role, but I do believe that this is Ronald Jones. It's his job to start the year.
Well, I can tell you, as Mr. Patriot, I could tell you, if they don't find somebody to do that role in some way, because, you know, so much Brady efficiency the last couple of years was him running, you know, run play action, you know, and they run that power eye and they run everything through there. And, you know, when Devlin went down last year, so too went the offense. They could not run the ball anymore. And when they couldn't run the ball anymore because Devlin was out, and they run that fullback system and they like to run out of that power eye, And next thing you know, the offense went in the tank. And next thing you know, Brady's stats went in the tank and everything fell apart for that offense and for that team collectively. And if they don't figure out how to do that in some fashion of it, because that's the running game has really propped up Brady the last couple of years. I'm not taking anything away from Brady. He's the GOAT. But at the same time, you have to recognize where he is in his career. And that was a very big part of his ability to be the passer he was the last three seasons because of how good of a job the Patriots did of setting up the run and then running play action. And if they can't do that, I think people might not realize that Tampa might struggle a little bit more than people
realize. I really
thought,
so there's rumors, for what it's worth, there's rumors out there that the Bucs are interested in Devonta Freeman, which makes a ton of sense, I guess, which tells you that they're not particularly high on either Vaughn or Ronald Jones.
That would be an interesting fit. He also caught the football very well last year for Atlanta.
Exactly. He's a better pass catcher
he's
than
the James White kind of guy you need. Yes. In that, or Kevin Falk kind of guy, or Deion Lewis kind of guy.
I really thought that they were going to sign Deion Lewis as soon as he was let go by the Titans, because I was like, Deion Lewis has experience with Tom Brady. He obviously had his best career year with Tom Brady.
Why don't they just bring back everybody? Let's get Troy Brown and dust him off. Why don't we just get everybody? Whoever played for the Patriots.
Randy Moss? Why not?
Yeah, Randy could still play, right?
Coming from a Keyshawn Vaughn guy, I'm still going to have a lot of shares of Ronald Jones just because I want exposure to this offense, and you're getting it for super cheap. Whoever the starting running back is, he's going to be good. He's going to be a high-end RB2, and I think that it's probably going to be Ronald Jones from the start of the season, so I want some shares. Now, Tags, tell me who my guy is.
Raheem Mostert?
No, dude, it's Kareem Hunt.
Really?
I'm just kidding. It's Raheem Mostert.
I do
like Kareem Hunt. I think that even with Nick Chubb there, Kareem Hunt can be very good. He outproduced Nick Chubb from the time he came back last year. And so I'm not drafting any Nick Chubb. I will draft a lot of Kareem Hunt, but it's definitely Raheem Mostert. Ever since he took over as the lead back in San Francisco's backfield, he was the man. He was a top three fantasy football running back. Now, this is including the three games in the playoffs where he absolutely went off too, but he was a stud for 8 consecutive weeks, guys.
He was a stud, unpredictable stud, though. That's the issue with it, right? Matt Breida is gone, which clears up a lot of that uncertainty. You do have Jerick McKinnon coming back, who the 49ers, for whatever reason, have held on to Jerick McKinnon this entire time. Like,
he has nude photos of somebody
apparently
somewhere.
He might. I mean, Kyle Shanahan's he's a good dude. He's a young dude, but you don't know what he's doing. But yeah, Raheem Mostert is a guy like Ronald Jones, and the fact that I do think that he has this lead role. I think that as the season went on, we saw that the 49ers and Shanahan understand that Tevin Coleman is not a workhorse. He's best suited as a complimentary guy, but you have McKinnon coming back who's going to steal some work in the passing game. You have Jeffrey Wilson, who you know is going to steal like 3 touchdowns in one game. You have Kyle Juszczyk, who's still part of the offense. So there's a lot of parts in this offense, but fortunately there's a lot of volume here. So Raheem Mostert is a guy that I put on my list because I do think there's a chance he breaks out if Shanahan changes things. But we can't forget, guys, Raheem Mostert, he's no spring chicken. He's not young. He's been in the league for a while now.
Kyle Shanahan have miles on his legs, though.
Well, that's true. But what I'm saying is, like, why hasn't he been used? Like, what's the reason that...
There's always a reason.
There has to be a reason, right?
And he also only had one game in the regular season, at least, where he had 15 carries.
Yeah.
Or more. And that's the one that's the big... Like, you got to get 15 to 8. Like, even Miles Sanders, like, I expect between 15 and 18 on a regular basis, right? Like, that's what I expect. I don't expect 25. That's nuts. That's like Derrick Henry season territory. But, like, that's my thing with Mostert, and their weird commitment to everybody else is always the thing that holds me up. And I agree. I think Mostert showed you in the playoffs, like, he deserves the shot to be that guy. I'm just not sold that he's going to be that guy. And I hate this. I don't want to put this one-year wonder tag on him. But it just feels way more C.J. Anderson than it does like...
Well, C.J. Anderson was being drafted in the first round. We're getting Raheem Mostert in the 7th.
Not in the Black Book that year.
We're getting him in the
7th. So much crap that year. Oh, my God. People...
Some people
were
drafting him like 3rd overall, man.
You're
yeah.
so stupid. Why did you put C.J. Anderson in the first round? How can you not do it? I'm like, well, dude, like, because he hasn't proved it. Honestly, like, he just hasn't... And I was the guy who picked him up and had him everywhere.
And
yet, I still didn't
you're picking Kenyon Drake. Who's like the same as CJ Anderson?
But I've seen Kenyon Drake be good for years. No. But I've seen years of Kenyon Drake be used well. I mean, play well and not be used properly. That's the difference. The difference is we haven't seen Mostert because why? That's the question mark. And I think that's what Mike's alluding to.
Because he had no draft capital. And finally, when he got his opportunity,
Adam Thielen didn't have any draft capital. He moved pretty quickly.
Yeah, you're right. hey, let me ask you a couple questions, okay? What do you think the odds are that Raheem Mostert's in that role?
In what, the lead back role?
Yeah.
Well, he's going to be the lead back. The question is, does he get those 15 carries per game?
Okay, so what are the odds that he gets those 15 carries?
I would put it those odds at
30%. 30%. Oh, okay,
wow. I was going to go higher than that. I was going to go 50.
50. But, okay, so we'll split the difference and say 40. If he gets those 15 carries, is he an RB1 in Kyle Shanahan's offense?
15 carries a game, is he involved in the passing game? Because he had 22 targets all last season.
He's not especially involved, no. Same as last year, just, you know, what he did over the final 8 weeks.
So 15 carries, you're looking at 240 carries in the season. It's kind of like Jonathan Taylor territory.
Most efficient running back in football.
I think you'd be looking at a middling RB2, maybe top 15, maybe.
He played 60% of snaps, by the way, in 2 of 16 games. I'm just throwing
that out
there.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I don't believe in, like, he's been crazy efficient. You go back to 2018.
And that's good.
He averaged 7.7 yards per carry in 2018. So he was good then. It wasn't as big a sample size, but... Yeah, I like Raheem Mostert as a player, but I for whatever reason, it's one of those things where it's like we wondered why Kenyon Drake wasn't getting a bigger role in Miami, no matter who the coach was, and it's like then he goes to Arizona, and then he gets all the opportunity. I don't know if Shanahan found a hidden gem. I don't know if he realized in the playoffs. I don't know if he thought, oh, you know what? I got this running back that's extremely fresh. He's on a roll. We're going to ride him. The first bad game, does he go back to Tevin Coleman and create some nasty timeshare where you really can't trust him? I mean, looking at the game logs, man, I mean, 10 and 11 – 11 carries or less in, I think, all but 5 games, that's not good. Especially when a guy doesn't catch passes, because it just gives you a very, very low floor.
Don't just look at the game logs, man. Look at the postseason as well.
Oh, no. I know the postseason, but it's an extremely small sample size. You know what I mean? It's like those people that wanted to draft Robert Foster as a top 30 wide receiver last year because he finished the year. And Breshad Perriman, obviously. Yeah, Breshad Perriman was like the number 2 fantasy wide receiver during the fantasy playoffs. Does that mean I'm going to draft him? No. It's a small sample size.
I am drafting Breshad Perriman, by the way.
That's one of those analytical moments, too, where the thought process was also good because that the workload became John Brown. like the theoretical of, okay, what are we targeting? What are we looking for? It wasn't Foster. It ended up being John Brown.
Because John Brown's a good receiver and Robert Foster was not.
Right. But I mean, Foster, that was the whole point. Is absolutely. But whether you're good or not, you know,
right,
to a certain extent, the number one on even a bad team sometimes is going to be useful to you in fantasy. And that was the one thing that people were looking at. But defining it is more important than just being aware of it.
But the bottom line here, Bobby, it's good that you brought him up because Raheem Mostert is definitely someone that belongs in this list as someone. And the reason that he's going outside the top 60 overall is because of those risks. So I have no issue with him being on this list.
I like that we all hammered each other on the guys outside that we like. That's great.
Yeah.
That's
you got to do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We have to vet each other's thing. And look, this is the point, right? Good conversation, good debate. Everybody's, you know, everybody made their choices for reasons and everybody has to listen to all the reasons of why these guys were all dangerous. Like all 3 of the guys that we picked, everybody else was like, well, I don't know, but you got to think about that. And that's why they're going outside the top 50.
Wait, let's give Bobby the first one in this next one. Bobby,
we're going to do
the breakout wide receiver inside the top 60 picks. So these guys are obviously all going to be, like, they're going to be fantasy relevant wide receivers, but we're looking for a guy that can truly break out, finish as a top 12 fantasy wide receiver, but maybe you're getting him in the 5th round. Bobby, who's your guy?
Well, I've got 3 of them, and I was hoping that you guys would help narrow the list for me because I'm not exactly sure who to pick. So we're looking for this year's version of Chris Godwin, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Tags. I'm taking your guy.
You're a piece of crap.
But
help is on mine,
it's,
too.
It's my number one. And I'm also speaking for Kyle Yates because he really helped talk me.
No, we're all on board on this one.
This is who you want? Okay, you go ahead and take this one. I'll go with a different one, Tags.
Go ahead. No, I got 3 on my list, too. You're good.
My God, this is like watching my mother and my grandmother fight over
seriously,
a check.
Seriously, just take it. I gave you the first one. Take it. It's easy.
All right, well, it's obviously Calvin Ridley.
Oh, well, that's mine, too. So there we go. Let's just... Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to Fantasy Pros. It's been a fun show for you today.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of reasons to like Calvin Ridley. Bobby, why do you think that Calvin Ridley has the potential to be a wide receiver 1? Because there's a lot of people out there. I'm going to try and give the opposite point of view because there's people listening saying, oh, come on, Julio Jones
is there,
Bobby.
You're going to try to fight Calvin Ridley? I don't think you can do it, man.
Well, I'm going to say that Julio Jones is there. Julio Jones has been there, and Julio Jones will continue to be the wide receiver 1. How is it that Calvin Ridley can break out if he didn't already last year?
Calvin Ridley was among the top 5 most efficient wide receivers in football, and he didn't get all that many targets. And now he's going to get all those targets because how many targets are gone? Just an absolute ton. Yeah, Julio Jones is going to get some of those, but Austin Hooper leaves. I get it. Hayden Hurst comes in. He's not Austin Hooper.
No.
Devonta Freeman leaves.
He's better than Austin Hooper.
He was great in the passing game.
You think he's better than Austin
Hooper? I think
Hayden
Hurst is actually more talented than Austin Hooper. I'm not saying he's going to get those targets right away.
I don't think. I guess maybe that's what I'm alluding to. Like, I don't think he's going to usurp that role. And that's very rarely do I like to do the addition by subtraction. But in this instance, when you're talking about a guy in 29 career games who has 17 touchdowns, we're talking about a guy who has shown you glimpses of taking over games. So even his rookie year, there were a couple of games Calvin Ridley had where we were just like, whoa, look at that. Like, that is incredible. And sometimes, you know, it's difficult for a guy, you know, early on in his career when you're playing next to a Hall of Famer necessarily to kind of eat into that workload. But I think as another year passes of Julio Jones, and I am not down on Julio Jones at all,
right,
I just feel like this is a ready to take that next step and move forward here. And I think Ridley, you know, I'm looking at him, and I know Matt Ryan was hurt a little bit last year too, and I think that might have a little bit to do with some of the numbers not being exactly where you wanted them with Calvin Ridley. But when all said and done, like, this is year three, and I think Calvin Ridley's ready to become a superstar.
Like, you remember when Juju Smith-Schuster was extraordinarily efficient as a rookie? He only had 79 targets, but he made the best of them. And he finished as a wide receiver too, and then the next year he totally broke out. Calvin Ridley, 92 targets, wide receiver 2. 93 targets, wide receiver 2. He's getting 120 this season. And if he gets 120, he's one of the most efficient wide receivers in football. And when you watch him on tape, one of the best 12 or 15 wide receivers in football in terms of talent, he's going to be maybe a low-end wide receiver 1, guys.
Yeah,
In his final 6 games, he averaged 17.1 PPR points per game. So that tells you when that run happened with the Falcons.
Once Sanu went out, yeah, that's who he was.
When Sanu was gone, right? That's the other piece, too. Like, Sanu's gone, Hooper's gone. So when those guys were out, he did respond. And that was when Ryan was healthy and when this team played much better. They were as good as they were in the second half, as bad as they were in the first. They were atrocious. But, you know, Ridley showed you in those last 6 weeks of, oh, wow, okay, he is ready. And I think part of the reason to let those guys walk is because the organization realizes, look, this guy's ready to fill these bigger shoes, so let's go with that. Let's be more efficient. Let's turn around and spend cap money elsewhere, and let's improve the defense, and maybe we can find someone who wants to tackle somebody on the Falcons for once this year.
Tags, honestly, in terms of talent, which duo is better, Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, or Mike Evans and Chris Godwin?
I've already had this debate on Twitter. I put it up to a poll. And,
have you? Okay.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, I lost that poll. I take Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley any day of the week.
Me too.
I don't know what people are thinking.
Three for three.
Chris Godwin's extremely talented, and he's broken out, and that's why people want to gravitate towards him. But I promise you, if Calvin Ridley had the target opportunity that Chris Godwin had, he would do just as much. I promise you that. And Julio Jones is obviously better than Mike Evans. So I'm with you on this one, Bobby. I was just trying to give you the opposite take and just trying to argue with you a little bit, because some people have told me that if Julio Jones were to get hurt, Calvin Ridley would see double coverage. Well, Calvin Ridley does see double coverage now. He actually gets bracketed a little bit because Julio Jones gets a lot of number one cornerbacks, and they trust those guys in man-to-man coverage. But losing Mohamed Sanu is massive for this offense. Obviously, Austin Hooper had a big role. Hayden Hurst, I do anticipate him coming in and taking a lot of targets. But I have Hayden Hurst projected for 86 targets, so it's not quite getting up to Austin Hooper territory. Calvin Ridley, my projections came in at 118 targets. And depending on if I give him 7 or 8 touchdowns, he ranges from either the wide receiver 9 or wide receiver 13 this year. So I am 100% in on Calvin Ridley. He's being undervalued. He is a potential breakout star. And if something did happen to Julio Jones, he would just be a target monster. And Calvin Ridley would win fantasy championships.
Ridley's a touchdown machine, man. He's 17 touchdowns on 185 targets.
Yeah, I told you, 17 touchdowns in 29 games.
It's insane. Like,
you know, and part of that is because of the attention Julio gets, and he's open in the reds, and that's fine by me.
Yep.
Sign me up. Where's the note? Where can I sign that? And I can sign the contract to get that on my team. I'm good with
that. Yep. But if Julio did go down, now those touchdown numbers would decrease. I do believe that, but the volume would come up to help make
exactly.
up for that.
Exactly. You're in PPR. You're it's a push almost, not quite, but almost.
All right, guys. Before we move on over to the next player, I want to tell you about Omaha Steaks. Just the other day, I was thinking, man, what am I going to have for dinner? Boom. Great steak delivered to my door for a great price. And I popped these bad boys open. I cooked them. I am not kidding you. I could cut the steak with a fork. It was delicious. My mouth is watering now just remembering it. And guys, I promise you, this is a very reasonable price. It is a great value to order Omaha Steaks. And right now, Omaha Steaks is offering my listeners access to a variety of amazing packages that are perfect to send dad for Father's Day. Go to omahasteaks.com and enter the promo code FANTASYPROS into the search bar. You'll see all the great options available, many that include free shipping and a free one-pound package of their perfectly cured, incredibly thick applewood smoked steak-cut bacon. There are many packages available that are perfect for your dad, and they're all ready to be shipped straight to your door in time for Father's Day. Omaha Steaks has a variety of Father's Day packages available that include the world-famous Omaha Steaks, naturally aged at least 21 days for tenderness and hand-carved to perfection. Burgers, franks, sausages, and other favorites perfect for grilling. They got premium poultry and pork, cut by Omaha Steaks butchers and individually sealed for freshness and flavor. You can also get tasty and easy-to-make side dishes, no-work, one-step family meals, artisan desserts, and much, much more. Right now, Father's Day packages are ready to order and ready to ship, and many include that free shipping and a free pound of steak-cut bacon. Omaha Steaks delivers guaranteed quality and safety with every order, so send Dad a gift of food he'll love this year. Visit omahasteaks.com and type Fantasy Pros, all one word, in the search bar to shop for Father's Day today. And please keep in mind that the deal ends on June 15th, so be sure to place your order now. Again, that's omahasteaks.com and type Fantasy Pros into the search bar to shop for Father's Day and get free shipping and free steak cut bacon with select packages. So, Tags, I also thought about saying DJ Chark and Terry McLaurin. Who were your other names that you were considering?
I like that you bring them up already. Like, you don't even give me a chance to say my guys. Chark was one of the guys on my list. I had three guys down. Chark was one of those guys, but he was the last one. Number two, DK Metcalf. DK Metcalf is being drafted just inside the top 60, so I even went towards the bottom of this list and said, you know what? You want a guy that's tied to obviously a top-tier quarterback. Because like if they're being drafted outside the top three or four rounds, these are guys that are not guaranteed 120 targets. DK Metcalf, I think you could safely say that he's going to get 100 targets, maybe might get up to that 115 range. Fortunately for him, Russell Wilson completes sometimes 70% of his passes to his wide receivers, which is kind of ridiculous. But Russell Wilson has asked to throw the ball more. This defense is worse than it's ever been. They continue to lose players. And Jadeveon Clowney, we don't know what's going on. He hasn't signed with anybody yet, but I anticipate him being gone from that defense. The cornerback Quentin Dunbar that they just signed in free agency, he's in trouble with the law. I don't think he's gonna be playing football anytime soon. So this defense is going to be crap. So therefore, Russell Wilson is going to be asked to throw the ball more. DK Metcalf is a guy that when he came into the NFL, he was considered raw. And I'm putting that in quotes because so many people talked about his combine and said, oh, he's fast, but he's stiff as hell. He can't run a route. I'm like, okay, guys, keep talking. And they did, and DK Metcalf kept falling in rookie drafts, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, DK Metcalf is a physical specimen tied to Russell Wilson, and he has magnets for hands. DK Metcalf can, break fantasy football. Like, legitimately has top five wide receiver upside if he were to get those targets.
He could be Dez Bryant, right?
Imagine for a second that Tyler Lockett...
I was going to say, he either becomes Anquan Boldin or becomes David Boston. He's going to become one of those two. I don't know which, but he's going to be one of those
two. He has Calvin Johnson type upside.
Tags, you're the hot take guy.
Wait, hold on a second, wait.
No, upside? Sure, why not?
No, he doesn't have Calvin Johnson upside?
Are you kidding me?
Nobody has Calvin Johnson upside.
Yes, he does.
Everyone does?
Not everyone.
Except you.
But when you're as big and when you're a physical specimen like Metcalf, yes, it's possible. Now, I would never say that someone's
going to Calvin Johnson could have been an all-pro running back, man.
No, he couldn't have.
He was incredible in space. Incredible. He was an incredible route runner. And he had all of DK Metcalf's physical abilities.
Was special. But DK, and that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying DK Metcalf's Calvin Johnson. Don't get it twisted.
Okay.
I'm saying that DK
I was trying
Metcalf,
to twist it. Yeah.
Don't make this tawdry.
Right. Like, you mean to tell me that DK Metcalf can't be better than Kenny Galladay? He can. And he might be this year.
I think he could be a better version of Kenny Galladay. That's a good way to put it. But I'm not going to have any shares of DK Metcalf. He's going ahead of Keenan Allen.
Well, I was agreeing with Mike in terms of this physical presence. Yeah, the upside physical presence of terrifying is like a Calvin Johnson where you're just terrifying that guy. He's got to catch, the ball more, just period.
Well, they have to pass the ball more than, four times a game.
That's true, too. There's a lot of things that are weird.
If they do, though, I agree, Tags. He does have a ton of upside, but I think he went maybe a little too far for me.
And you know what? If he has a great season, this will finally be the year where Russell Wilson gets a real MVP look.
He should have already. I mean,
I'm not disagreeing
with
you.
Without Russell Wilson, that team is legit a bottom five NFL team.
Russell Wilson's the best player in football already.
Ooh.
I don't want to go that
okay
far.
Okay,
he is. I'll take him. I would take it if you change Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson. If you put Russell Wilson in the Chiefs' offense, he's better than Patrick Mahomes.
Nope, not willing to say it.
I don't see any. Patrick Mahomes does things I've never seen a human being do before.
So does Russell Wilson.
After 1 year, I was not willing to buy all in on the Patrick Mahomes saying he's the GOAT and all this and that. But now that I've seen it like consistently,
see, I was. Like, I'm Mr. Quarterback.
He's kind of ridiculous.
Like, I kind of pride myself on the quarterback thing.
He was almost as efficient as Ryan Tannehill last year.
Stop.
Okay, so you said DK Metcalf. I love the upside. I agree.
Oh.
I won't have any shares because he's going ahead of Keenan Allen. Joe, who's your other guy?
Well, Ridley was my number one with, you know, and then there was a big drop off from two. But okay. This was a guy that I owned everywhere last year, and I'm going to probably own him again this year, and it's Courtland Sutton.
Oh, no. Tags is going to beat you up, dude.
He can beat me up. He can beat me up. But you know what? I won a lot of leagues last year with a wide receiving core built of Chris Godwin, Courtland Sutton, and Cooper Kupp.
Ooh, nice.
All three of those guys. And I mean, like, I just described pretty much 75% of my teams. Like, I had the combination of those three guys or at least two of the three. And I understand, like, it's not perfect. I get that. Like, that's what we're not looking for. But, you know, 124 targets, and he played mostly with Joe Flacco, who was just pathetic. And I'm not saying Drew Lock is Patrick Mahomes, because he's not. But
he could be a lot better than Flacco.
What I'm saying is he's better than Flacco, I think. And number two, I think you're also setting him up in a situation where it's almost, and I keep using this phrase with him, too big to fail. You have all these, you have Lindsay, you have Gordon, you have Judy, you have Courtland Sutton, you have Fant, you have all these guys there. And like, if he sucks, man, that's on you. Like, you've got a lot of pieces here to make it work. He had six touchdowns. Everybody gave up on him when Drew Lock took over, and he was pretty good when Drew Lock took over. I'm saying is the volume's there. I think Judy might be the better talent, but at the same time, I have to have some sort of tempered expectations, at least for one more year in 2020, that all these rookies, especially the wide receivers, can get out there and just completely dominate right out of the gate, because we are not in a normal offseason, and I think that matters, and I think it's going to show itself in the first 6 weeks of the season, so I'm sticking to that. But again, Ridley was my number one by far, but if I had to pick another guy that I'm still in love with in this range of the later range towards 60, it would be Sutton.
Sure. So it's really interesting.
Count me, Tags. Go ahead.
Tags and I do not like Courtland Sutton. I'm actually with him here.
Did you like him last year? He was pretty good last year, too.
I did like Courtland Sutton last year. Okay. The problem is all the competition for targets. I don't think his upside is really there because of that.
See, I like the competition because I think that's finally going to free him up a little bit more, too. Like, there's a lot more guys. I'm thinking the opposite of everybody else. Like, oh, well, there's so much competition for targets. Okay, so maybe the targets go from 120-something to 115, but maybe he catches 80-something balls or 90 balls out of that instead of the 72, because there's so many other guys on the field you have to worry about now, and you didn't have to worry about that last year for the most part.
What I was going to say is his ECR is way above his ADP, so the experts in the industry tend to be with you, Joe. As opposed to Tags and I. Tags, why don't you make the opposing point?
Good. Counter me.
I mean, no, he ranked 15th in the league in targets last year. He finished 19th in fantasy scoring, and that's despite coming down with a lot of questionable 50-50 balls that a lot of receivers wouldn't have. Courtland Sutton.
And coming down with a bad case of Joe Flacco.
Well, yeah, balled.
He's a lot like Alshon Jeffrey. I think he's a quality receiver. I just don't love the situation.
Courtland Sutton was fantastic last year as a player. Now, but my issue is that Drew Lock is not going to come out and throw 30 touchdowns. And when you add in Jerry Jeudy, a guy that's going to command targets, Jerry Jeudy is the better talent in terms of what he can do to get separation. Courtland Sutton is still a magnet in terms of like what he's going to do in the red zone. But again, if Drew Lock is only throwing 22 touchdowns, where are these touchdowns going? He has Noah Fant, a guy that's going to be coming into his second year, flashed a little bit rookie year. They went out and they drafted Albert O, which is Drew Lock's favorite guy from college. The touchdown, his basically favorite target in the red zone, that could take a little looks away. They have Melvin Gordon, who's been fantastic on the goal line throughout his career. He's been like one of the best goal line running backs in football. They still have Phillip Lindsay. KJ Hamler was someone that they drafted to take place in the slot, I'm guessing, of Deshaun Hamilton. So it's like you look at all these mouths and it's like he's for sure not getting up to 125 targets, because this is still a Vic Fangio team. It does help that Pat Shurmur. Right, but it does help that Pat Shurmur came there. But Shurmur, what he has done throughout his career, he's actually amplified like slot receivers. He's done really good for them. So KJ Hamler might be a little bit undervalued. Jerry Jeudy can move into the slot. Sutton's not a guy that you're going to move into the slot. He's not that guy.
No, of course not. Look, what I'm expecting from Sutton is somewhere between 6 and 8 touchdowns and a repeat of the yardage total with maybe 80 catches. And you know what? That's a pretty good value where he is right now.
I'm not going to say he's a terrible value. I think he's going to be a low-end wide receiver, too. I just don't know if there's breakout upside here where he's going to finish as a top-5 wide receiver with the talent without an injury on that team to one of the major contributors.
That's fair. That is fair. This is fun.
All right, guys, let's go outside the top 60 for wide receivers. Tag's your first this time.
All right, I get to go first this one. Yeah. All right, I'm going to go with Diontae Johnson.
No, son of a... What are we doing here? From now on, we have to get together ahead of time. This is, you know, come
well,
on.
Well, no, it's a good thing. You know, we usually argue about a lot of things. But Diontae Johnson, a lot of people are going back and they're looking at last year's stats and they're trying to figure out, okay, Juju's the guy. There's not enough targets to go around. Chase Claypool, I don't even think he's going to start. Let's get that out of the way right from the get-go. James Washington is a guy that's never really panned out in the offense as much as we thought he might. And, you know, drafting Chase Claypool, it signifies that they're moving on from him. They are not mad about Diontae Johnson. I think that they've gotten to the point with James Washington where they said he's just not going to be the player that we expected because they're not going to draft a fourth wide receiver. James Washington and Chase Claypool are going to compete for that third wide receiver spot. And you can't look at last year's stats. You can't do that because basically Ben Roethlisberger, when he's in the offense, this team throws the ball a ton. They do not run fewer than like 66 plays per game with Ben Roethlisberger on the field. They run a lot of no huddle. They do run a lot of three wide receiver sets. But Diontae Johnson is going to play that Antonio Brown role in the offense. That's what they want him to do. He's been in Ben Roethlisberger's ear all offseason. Ben Roethlisberger's been saying some great things about him, saying he wants to be better. He wants to learn. Juju is going back to the slot, which is great for Juju's projection, but Diontae Johnson is locked into 100 targets in this offense. That is actually happening and from Ben Roethlisberger. So when you take the efficiency increase that you get from Mason Rudolph and Devlin friggin' Hodges and you go to Ben Roethlisberger in 105, I have him projected for 105 targets. That's a modest projection because I do have the combination of Washington and Claypool kind of battling it out for right around 100 targets. That's, I can lower that to 80, and all of a sudden there's more targets available in this offense. So
yeah.
Diontae Johnson,
and Big Ben threw the ball 675 times the last time he was the starting quarterback.
He
so
did.
That happens again.
And the Steelers defense has gotten better, and I don't think he's going to throw that much coming off the surgery. You know, age 38 now. There's some question marks about that, but I have him down for 598 pass attempts. So I'm being conservative in that because I do believe there is opportunity for him to throw a little bit more. But Diontae Johnson, if Juju Smith-Schuster really is having issues becoming the guy, I do think it helps move him back to the slot, and that's why I like Juju so much this year. But Diontae Johnson is going to be a player and a guy that I think you could probably rely on for wide receiver 3 production this year.
I agree. He was on my list too. He wasn't my guy though. Joe, do you want to pick someone else besides Diontae Johnson?
No, I don't. I want to pick Diontae Johnson. To be honest with you, I really do. Some of the stuff I came armed with for this argument was, again, in 2018, the Steelers ran the fourth most plays in football. I mean, like, it's just, there is so much potential to bounce back here. And yeah, of course, there's always potential for everything to implode as well. But, you know, whether or not Juju is the guy, isn't the guy, that's neither here nor there. I do agree with Tags 100%. Moving him back into the slot is the best thing that could happen for him. I think that's where he's comfortable. And Diontae Johnson, we're talking Mason Rudolph and Devlin frickin' Hodges, and he still had 59 catches for 680 and 5 touchdowns. Like, I mean, can we, you know, I mean, if you give him 92 targets with Ben Roethlisberger, we're going to have a good season here. Let's give him 100-something targets with Ben Roethlisberger. We're going to have a good season. That Pittsburgh offense was abysmal. And I don't even know if that's a good enough word to describe how bad it was at times last year. But maybe it's even worse. But Diontae Johnson, I'm looking at that guy. We kept looking, okay, there's always another guy that's going to emerge. And when you're looking at a guy, he's outside the top 100, even, Diontae Johnson right now. I mean, he is such a great value. You know, I would say all the shares, like every single league where he is around, I will take him around early just to make that statement because I don't like to reach for players. But at the same time, I think when you identify, just like last year with Godwin, last year with Sutton, last year with certain guys, that they're going a round or two later than they should, take them a round or two earlier than they're going and be ahead of that trend because there's no reason not to. And when you get into the, you know, 100 overall, it's a crapshoot anyway for the most part. So why not get the guy who you think is going to make an impact? And I think Diontae Johnson can make an impact. Debo Samuel is the only one, but that's lame because I said him last year and he really got hurt and didn't play enough and all that stuff. But that's the only other guy outside where I just think if you could build in a lab the perfect guy for Kyle Shanahan's Debo Samuel, and I just think he's a rock star. So
he's awesome.
That's the only other guy.
Yeah, his ADP, by the way, is in the top 50. His ECR is outside the top 60. I don't understand that. Tags, why is everyone in the industry lower on Samuel than his ADP?
it's one of those teams that you worry about the amount of plays, you worry about Kyle Shanahan and the distribution of targets, you worry about Brandon Ayuk coming in, you're going to have George Kittle healthy for the entire season. Jalen Hurd is supposed to be a guy that they were relying on to do a lot of different things. Some people still believe that Dante Pettis is going to be a thing. There's just a lot of targets in that offense.
Dante Pettis getting cut.
To be fair, Deebo Samuel was a guy that I had ranked around the number 27 wide receiver before I did projections, and I got done with the projections and I was shocked to see that he went inside my top 20 receivers. I don't know if I'm going to rank him there, but it seems like it's probable that he's actually going to finish as a top 24 wide receiver. And obviously he flashed last year. I just don't know if he does as much after the catch, because he was one of those guys like AJ Brown where these guys got the ball in their hands and they were just lightning. And you just don't average, you know, over 7 yards after the catch or whatever these guys were doing. AJ Brown was like 9, and Samuel was somewhere around that territory. So there's going to be natural regression there. You do worry about basically just the volume in that offense overall, because they want to be a run first team.
I like Deebo Samuel, but everything you said makes sense, Tags.
All of it makes sense, but I'll tell you what, I don't think any of them are reason to scare me off Deebo Samuel this year, because I think had he played a full healthy season last year, we would be talking about him in a whole, I mean, we're talking moving about 3 rounds. Like that's I think where we would be. And that means there's an opportunity this year to get a really good value on Deebo. And I think you take that value, because the one thing when you watch those 49ers, they run those quick slants over the middle, man. That is what they do. That is pretty much the offense. And I would sit there and I'd watch these games and I'm thinking to myself, how do the defensive coordinators are not like just defending against this? Like, this is what they do. Make Jimmy Garoppolo throw the ball deep, make challenge him, do these things, take away these short slants, and no one would ever do it. And maybe it's a testament to the way they're running the offense, or the looks they're giving at the line of scrimmage, or maybe it's just the talent of Deebo, but they couldn't stop it. And they couldn't stop in the playoffs either. And at a certain point, you have to kind of just tip your hat and say, okay, you know what? You have to buy into what's going on here. And this is the last year I think you can buy into it. I don't think any of the reasons that Tag gave, although they're all really good, I don't think any of them are enough to steer me or shy me away from taking a chance on Samuel where he's at in ADP.
I'm going to have a lot of shares of Hardman from the Chiefs just in case he surpasses Sammy Watkins. I'm going to have a lot of shares of Brashad Perriman in case he's the wide receiver one for the Jets.
No, don't just erase the Perriman one. But go with, I love the Mecole Hardman was my second guy that I would have said, because that dude was like legit efficient, man, as hell.
Scary.
Like over the last 10 years, of every single player that's seen 30 targets or more, he had the fourth most fantasy points per target. He had, the third most yards per target.
He's a bad man.
It was crazy efficient. And again, there were some big plays in there, but that's what Mecole Hardman brings. That's what Andy Reid brings. He's tied to Patrick Mahomes. And if for whatever reason they do, like, kind of just shove him in front of Sammy Watkins a little bit and give him that opportunity, Mecole Hardman is true. He has true breakout potential.
How hard is it to defend against the Chiefs this year with Hardman, Hill?
It's not fair. And Sammy Watkins actually was a good football player. I don't know if that's going to happen, but...
With Kelsey, with CEH.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this. Not as hard as is defended against the Cowboys.
I disagree.
The Cowboys last year had more yards per play.
It's different. I think the Chiefs are more unpredictable.
Yep.
In terms of what they can do, and more explosive in terms of what they can do, because, you know, like Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman alone, when they touch the ball one time,
Edwards Hilaire
like,
coming out of the backfield.
Right. And now you've got a little bit more of a balance to the offense, which they lacked last year. And, you know, it's like, I know we sat here basically last summer doing the same thing. I know I did. I was like, why has everyone got Damian Williams so damn high? Can I please understand? Can someone explain this to me? Like, I understand. And this is the difference between falling in love with a situation but not really evaluating the talent properly. And, you know, going back to the earlier thing with Kenyon Drake, it's the opposite. It's the inverse. Is evaluating the talent property and realizing it wasn't his fault, you know, like to quote to quote earlier before we started the show, very good Will Hunting. I want to just hold Kenyon Drake and say it's not your fault over and over and over again, like Good Will Hunting over. Just not your fault, Kenyon. But this is the difference. And I think you're right. I think Mecole Hardman could be a terrorizing force this year, potentially.
My guy, though, I haven't got to him yet. And this is going to surprise a lot of you, because the past 2 years, I was like, please, actually past 3 years, please do not draft Will Fuller. This year, I'm drafting all the Will Fuller, baby.
I'll take Brandon Cooks.
You'll take Brandon Cooks? Okay.
I'm going to take a hard pass on everyone. How's that?
On everyone? So you don't like Deshaun Watson? Is that what you're saying,
I'm going to take Deshaun Watson, and then I'll figure it out later.
No, I wouldn't even do that. Honestly, it's going to be bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I play a lot of Superflex, so if you're going to give me a discount on him, I mean, I'm going to take it. So, you know, that's my point of view on it.
Everyone knows why I'm picking Will Fuller. We talked about wide receivers long enough, so let's move on to the next tier. And what we're going to do is we're going to mash quarterbacks and tight ends in together. So, Joe, you get to go first. Give me one quarterback or tight end? And just give me your other name, too, because I know you prepared a second one.
Well, look, you know, like I just said, I play a lot of super flex. So a guy that when I'm doing the quarterbacks for the Black Book, you know, when you just start peeling into things, when Saquon Barkley was on the field with Daniel Jones last year, Daniel Jones was a really efficient fantasy quarterback. He was giving you points. And I know it's not always pretty, but, you know, Tony Romo wasn't always pretty either.
And, I disagree on that. Tony Romo is gorgeous.
He's a handsome man, right? But, you know, it's you looking for fantasy points. That's what you're looking for. And Daniel Jones can run a little bit. I think they did address some of the offensive line issues in the offseason, finally. I thought they had a pretty good draft, to tell you the truth. And there was not one game last year where Daniel Jones played with all three of those wide receivers who were pretty darn good. I think Shepard, Slayton, and Tate all have, you know, a lot of ability. You have a very good tight end in Evan Ingram, and then you have an all-world running back in Saquon Barkley. How many teams can say that they're giving their quarterback that much to work with? So I think Daniel Jones is a super flex quarterback, looks really good. And I'll tell you what, too, the other thing that was fascinating to me, there's only one guy last year in that big, giant QB1 class that had a touchdown in every single game last year, a passing touchdown. Do you know who that was? Come on, Tags.
A rookie quarterback that had a passing touchdown every game?
Not a rookie. Give me a QB1 last year who had a touchdown, a passing touchdown in every single game last year.
Is it Russell Wilson?
No, it was Carson Wentz.
I like Carson Wentz a lot.
Me too. I love Wentz this year.
And I'm just pointing this out there for everybody. Like, if you miss out on the guys like Lamar and Mahomes because you don't want to pay that premium, the nice thing to have is consistency. And the one thing, I know Wentz ended on a down note with a concussion, but it's football. Like, you can't. Yeah, let's not forget that a couple years ago, people were falling over themselves to get Wentz and Watson before they all, you know, tore their ACLs. And the next thing you know, Mahomes and Lamar Jackson roll into town and they're all like, you know, that meme of the guy holding hands with the girl and everyone, the guy turns around. I feel like that was everybody with Carson Wentz for like a couple years ago. And I just want to remind everybody in single quarterback leagues that Wentz was incredibly consistent last year and had so much little to work with. In the wide receiving core, like it just really, it's just not good. And it's gotten better. It's not gotten great, but I think a full year, Miles Sanders, we'll see what Rager is. We'll see with all those.
I like Rager. I think that offense, I mean, even DeSean Jackson being healthy is going to help them a lot.
If there is such a thing as a healthy DeSean Jackson now, I'd like to see it. But I just think he's another guy and don't pass on. And in terms of tight end, you know, like, I feel like the soft middle of tight end is where I want to be. Like, I don't want to pay for the first three guys. I want to pay for that Andrews, Ingram kind of grouping of guys. But if I'm going to pass on everybody, I like Noah Fant too, because young quarterbacks tend to look for the tight end. And if we're talking about other options there in the red zone, I think Fant as a rookie tight end showed you glimpses, and most rookie tight ends don't even show you that. So I think I'm excited to see what he gives. But again, that's more of a like, okay, I've passed on tight end. Who do I think can outperform and actually be in the middle potentially next year? And I think Fant.
If there's one thing we've learned from the show, it's that Joe loves the Broncos offense.
No! Yeah. Look, that's a lot of talent, man. Look, I understand that they hiked the ball on 1 second every single time last year. I get that. Like, I get it was not pretty.
They still have Vic Fangio as their head coach, and he's going to limit those pass attempts.
You're not wrong, but at the same time, it's like, I feel like we're going to suppress them so much that they become an afterthought, and I think they're going to be better than that. I just do. I think there's going to be some pressure on there, and I think if there isn't even the slightest step forward in development from the quarterback, you could have a lot going on here. It's kind of like last year, everybody was crapping all over Daniel. Like, Daniel Jones sucks. He sucks. He sucks. He sucks. Right. And then all of a sudden he was putting up big fantasy games and be like, oh, maybe he doesn't suck so bad. Well, no, when you have Saquon Barkley and a bunch of other really good receivers, all of a sudden, like, it's a lot easier to play football. And I think that's kind of the Lock situation. I think he's going to surprise some people. I'll have a lot of third quarterback Drew Lock on my bench in Superflex. I can tell you that right now.
I'm going to have some shares of Noah Fant just because if you're getting one of those late round tight ends, first of all, you want someone with a good matchup in week one. And he's got one of the best matchups in week one. But second of all, you want someone with upside who could break out. And if he doesn't, so what? You cut him and you play the streaming game. I think Fant has that upside. It makes sense to me. My tight end would have been Tyler Higbee, but I'm not going tight end. I'm going quarterback. Tags, we're going to let you go first, though, because I'm going to end this show with a bang. I got some crazy stats on my guy.
I would have went Hayden Hurst at tight end 100%. It's not even close for me.
Yeah, I like him too. And Yates loves Hurst.
I'm going to tell everybody and their grandmother to draft Hayden Hurst this year. Right now he's a tight end 18 for whatever stupid reason. I really do believe people are going to wake up to this and say, wait, what are we doing here? Like, isn't the idea of tight ends the reason we follow them is for targets? Yeah, we do. And, oh, he just happens to play for the Atlanta Falcons. But my breakout here that I'm going to go with is Joe Burrow. And I almost never do this with a rookie quarterback. I stay away from rookie quarterbacks, but this kid is poised. He's ready for the NFL, and he has underrated rushing ability. He is a guy that legitimately, one of my knocks on him going through the scouting process was that he takes too many damn hits. Like, he doesn't get out of bounds. He does not slide. He is reckless in a way. And it reminds me, like, if you go back to Cam Newton's rookie year, he's not going to run like Cam Newton. I'm not saying that. But Cam Newton threw for multiple, like, I think there was a 400-yard game in there. There was another 300-yard game because it was a rookie, and teams almost, they expected them to run the ball quite a bit, and Cam Newton was able to throw the ball for a lot of yards. Joe Burrow has one of the better receiving cores in football. You look at this receiver depth chart and you say, if AJ Green is healthy, he's definitely a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL, if healthy. Obviously, there's some ifs there. Tyler Boyd has proven the ability to play in this league as one of the better slot receivers out there. You have John Ross, who can stretch the field. You have T. Higgins, who they drafted at the top of the second round, who's another guy that can stretch the field. He should be under AJ Green's tutelage and get better. Joe Mixon can catch passes out of the backfield. Giovanni Bernard can catch passes out of the backfield. They're getting Jonah Williams, their first round pick back from last year. They have a lot of equity invested in that offensive line. And then you look at the defense. This is like a situation you could look at the Tampa Bay Bucs last year and find so much correlation between the two. You have Tyler Boyd playing that kind of Chris Godwin, that slot receiver who's going to be peppered with targets. You have Mike Evans, AJ Green. You don't even have the running back that you do with the Bengals, but this defense is so bad that they are going to be forced into throwing the ball a lot. And fortunately, they have a guy, an offensive mind in Zach Taylor, who kind of was screwed in his first year, just lost so many damn players, it was going to be difficult for him to do much. So I love this Bengals offense, and I think Joe Burrow, in my projection, he came in at number 12 quarterback. And again, I am being conservative because I know how much I like him. But that's where I came in, because I do think that mobility that he offers you, I would take him over someone like Daniel Jones, because Daniel Jones is just too inconsistent for me. He was a guy that it was either 4 or 5 touchdowns or 1. He has a lot of fumbling issues, and this team needs to go back to Saquon Barkley and run the ball through him. They talked about building the offensive line in the draft because they wanted to run the ball more. I think that's going to happen. Again, he has tons of skill position players, but I think that Joe Burrow is someone that they're actually going to lean on to win football games, and kind of need to, because their defense is so piss poor.
Tags, listen to this, man. Joe Burrow, QBECR number 21?
Yep.
I mean, I'm not drafting him because he's playing the Chargers. If it's a super flex league, I'll draft Joe Burrow all day. But he's playing the Chargers in week one. I'm not playing him in week one.
The 21 is based on the exceptional last year, combined with the question mark of what happened before that, why didn't everything click?
He's going behind Jimmy Garoppolo and Kirk Cousins and Jared Goff.
Right, and I think that's because people just feel more warm and fuzzy with those guys. And
yuck.
And that's, I mean, inconsistency, thy name is Kirk Cousins. I mean, it's just, and I get that, and I understand why Mike is excited about Joe Burrow, and I actually think he's going to be better than a lot of other people do. And in super flex leagues, I can tell you right now, I'm going to have some Joe Burrow shares because defense is bad. As long as AJ Green is healthy and on that team, that's a huge win. That to me is a make or break for Joe Burrow, in my opinion. As great as Mixon is, as much as I love him, you give a rookie quarterback a guy like AJ Green, and I think then all of a sudden, like, you're like, okay, now we're in business, because that's a guy you can learn a lot from, and that's a guy that can really help a development just soar. And Burrow's like, I find Burrow to be one of these guys too. He's almost in that Brady mode where every time you tell him no, or it's not going to work, whatever it is, he just wants to stick it up your butt. And like, I love that, man. That's awesome. Like, and I think that's something you look for in your quarterback, you know, that guy, that type of personality. And I think he is that type of personality. And that's the thing that when you look at some other quarterbacks who have had, like Jay Cutler had a lot of talent, right? But Jay Cutler, I don't know if he ever had that kind of that MO or that vibe. Joe Flacco, same thing. It's like he had a big arm and stuff like that, but did he ever have that sort of leadership thing? Burrow has that weird intangible quality that I really like in a quarterback, and you can't, doesn't show up in the box score.
So does Baker Mayfield.
Shows up when you're watching. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why I haven't given up on Baker Mayfield, because Freddie Kitchens
didn't have an offensive line last year.
Well, but also he also didn't have a football head coach.
Correct. That's true.
You know, Freddie Kitchens was completely over his head as a head coach.
He's probably the worst head coach I've seen in a decade.
He's definitely in that conversation. Yeah, Adam Gase would like to raise his hand and say, I hold my beer. But but I think you're talking about, let's give him Stefanski. Let's get a guy who's far more prepared to be a head coach in the NFL, and let's see what Baker Mayfield is in year 3.
So, Tags, Cam Newton finished QB3 as a rookie. Robert Griffin III finished QB5. Andrew Luck, QB10 as a rookie. What's Burrow's upside? What's his ceiling here?
I will say that his ceiling, I'll go top six. I don't know if I would say that he's going to be top three. It's not to say that's not possible, but it's just so rare for a quarterback to get there. And you have to have, the reason that I say that even top six is because he does have that rushing upside that I think a lot of people are underrating. He's obviously a great passer. He just set a whole bunch of records. But if he's a guy that's got to move out of the pocket, and he does that extremely well. That, again, that's one of the things I like about Burrow is that he's so poised in the pocket. He does not overreact to pressure. He knows it's there, and he's going to need to know it's there, obviously, with the way that the Bengals offensive line has played, even though they have upgraded, are getting Jonah Williams back. But I like Burrow a lot. And again, he's not scared to run the football. He's not scared to do that. And this is a team that should average a ton of plays per game. Again, there's just so many parallels to a team like the Bucks last year, where nobody wanted to draft Jameis Winston. And are there going to be some bad games because he's a rookie? Probably. But I think once you get outside the first couple quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson, Dak Prescott, Patrick Mahomes, those guys, once you get outside those guys, you're going to have some duds from everyone. So I would say top six is a ceiling for Joe Burrow. But again, projections have him as a top 12 quarterback. It's tough to rank him there, I'll say that, but
I can't rank him 12, but I love the, look, you could basically, I mean, there's going to be moments this year in Superflex where he could be your third quarterback like if you are aggressive at the quarterback position and other people aren't, he could be your third guy.
I will say that if you wait and take him as your QB2, I'm more than okay. Cause like the idea that I want in Superflex or two quarterback leagues, what you want a quarterback who has legitimately zero chance of getting benched. There is zero chance that Joe Burrow gets benched.
Yeah, I would agree with that sentiment.
You're absolutely right. Okay, guys, my quarterback. So sometimes the group think in the industry just goes a little bit too far, and we get these false ideas of who a player has actually been. So my quarterback was third all-time in passing yards for the first four seasons of his career, and top 10 in touchdowns. And he did it with Adam Gase as his head coach and limited weapons in Miami. And then he got hurt. Adam Gase came in, absolutely destroyed him. He went to Tennessee. He was the backup for Marcus Mariota. And then what happened? He got the starting job with decent weapons, and he came in and he scored over 30 points per game in 10 games last season, in the 10 games that he started. I think he's the breakout quarterback this season, Ryan Tannehill. And in fact, I'm taking plus 8,000 odds on Ryan Tannehill winning the NFL MVP this year.
That's bold, my friend.
A silence falls over the podcast.
It does.
He was absolutely phenomenal. And you want to talk about from fantasy standpoint, he runs the ball as well. If you take his fantasy points divided by his pass attempts, here's the leaders. Lamar Jackson, number one. Deshaun Watson, number two. Ryan Tannehill right behind Watson at 0.81 fantasy points per pass attempt. Then it drops all the way down to Russell Wilson at 0.65. Tannehill was extraordinary last year from a fantasy perspective. He was ridiculous. And if the volume goes up, just how much better does it get?
The fantasy points per pass attempt doesn't apply to mobile quarterbacks as much. Like, you have to kind of do it. You have to separate it and say how many fantasy points per pass attempt, and you break it down to actually point fantasy points from passing and then from rushing. But either way, I like Tannehill, and I'm not going to sit here and say that he's a bad football player. He was a lot better than I think people gave him credit for before he came to Tennessee. But Bobby, I even bumped him up in pass attempts to 488, which would be legitimately a big bump from last year for this Tennessee Titans offense. Even still averaging 7.5 yards per attempt, having a 5.1% touchdown rate, he comes into like the QB20. It's not great. It's just not enough volume.
You bumped him down to 7.5. You lopped 25% off his efficiency.
Yes. I mean, before this, Bobby.
Yes.
Yes. Again, AJ Brown, if you literally cut his yards after catch in half, which is very, very, very likely. Bobby, by the way, 7.5 is still very, very, very good.
Oh, it's very good. He did that in Miami, man. He had 7.7 in Miami under Adam Gase.
Matthew Stafford has done that twice in his entire career.
Ryan Tannehill is a lot better than Matthew Stafford. Ryan Tannehill is so much. Ryan Tannehill was the number one quarterback in Pro Football Focus, man.
This is great. I'm waiting for somebody to tell somebody to go get their shine.
Ryan Tannehill was unbelievable. Okay, listen to this. If Ryan Tannehill had kept up his efficiency last year, for 521 passes. He would have beat Lamar Jackson in fantasy points, dude.
Hold on a second. Do we have a bet right here? Can I say, I'll take Joe Burrow, you take Ryan Tannehill. Is that our bet for this year?
That's our bet for the year. Bring it on.
Let's do it.
I will sanction that bet.
You are screwed.
I am.
Subscribe to the Fantasy Bros podcast so you can know all year long how this bet's going, because this is going to be great.
And I like Joe Burrow, but Ryan Tannehill is the man.
This is the best.
The Tennessee Titans are winning the Super Bowl this year, guys. They have the most complete team. They have the most complete team in the NFL.
You know who the man is? You know who the man is? I'm going to tell you who the man is. Okay? The man is Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
That's
you know
the
what's going to be weird?
That's who the
you know
man.
What's going to be weird? Is me standing by my TV rooting for Derrick Henry every week now.
Ryan Tannehill's going to rush for like 10 touchdowns, baby.
Well, you know what's funny, man? Like, I'm tired of the disrespect for Derrick Henry, because I was tired of it last year. You know, I came on this very show last year. We did our remember our prediction show and all that stuff? You go back and listen, last year it was Derrick Henry's going to lead the league in rushing. I know I only got it by a couple yards, but I still got it. You know what? So I don't care. But you know what? What's fun about that is we've gotten to this weird place in fantasy where we care so much about, like, well, the target volume and all these other things. Like, we kind of forget, like, yards are yards, right? Touchdowns are touchdowns. Who's the focal point of their offense? Like, all that stuff still matters. We're just living in an age where there's just not a lot of those guys. And Henry's a throwback kind of guy in a throwback kind of offense. And I just feel like that guy gets undervalued and underappreciated. And I understand why people would rather take Alvin Kamara on their team. I get that. But I don't know, man. Something about, I've seen Derrick Henry in person, and I don't want to get anywhere near tackling that guy. I'm not telling you right now, I am not tackling that guy. Like, here you go. Here's my check. Like, sorry, I'm not going to turn it in that week. I'm not tackling him. And you could see the Ravens also felt the same last year in the playoffs. But look, I think what Bobby's saying about Tannehill is, you know, when you get it, like we say about everybody, when you get out of that Adam Gase, you know, world, all of a sudden good things happen. Kenyon Drake, Lamar Miller, the list goes on and on, right? Of all these guys who, like, you know, were just ruined by the Dolphins, and then they all go on to better places.
And my point is, he was good even with Adam Gase. He was a top 10 fantasy quarterback.
He was improving also, and then everything hit the wall, and then the injury hit. Like, he was making incremental improvements, I agree, because I remember going back a couple years ago into Black Book and looking very hard at Tannehill and saying, look, there were some incremental year over year, I forget which year to year it was off the top of my head, but I was like, there's some things going in the right trajectory. And then it bottomed out, and then injury, and then, you know, the Dolphins. And then next thing you know, it's like he's a backup in Tennessee. And I think all of us last year were all thinking that Tannehill was going to play more games than Mariota, and we were all right about that.
Yeah. So I'm looking right now at who should I draft on Fantasy Pros, and I typed in Ryan Tannehill and Joe Burrow. There are 74 experts who have filled out their rankings. Joe, I want you to guess how many of them are on Tannehill, how many are on Burrow?
How many are on Tannehill, and how many are on Burrow? I imagine it's like a split, right? So actually, you know what?
No, I'm guessing Tannehill is like 75%.
No, you think it's that high?
It's higher.
No.
It's higher, baby. Wow. And I've got it sorted by the most accurate experts last year. Number one has Tannehill 3 higher. Number two has Tannehill 2 higher. Number three has Tannehill at number 10 overall, 4 higher. You have to go all the way down to number 15 to find the first guy who has Burrow higher.
That's fine. I get it. I mean, again, before I did my projections, I probably would have been like, it's close. But after going through it, I don't even think it's close.
All right. Well, this is going to be a lot of fun. By the way, Dan Harris is with you. I see that. Let me check out where Yates is. And then we can end the show. Oh, Yates has Joe Burrow way higher than Tannehill. So everyone on a podcast is
because
against
Yates me. Is a projections guy.
Yates is a projections guy. I'm a projections guy.
Well, not enough, apparently.
All right, guys, that's all for today's show. Joe, thank you so much for coming on. As always, it was a blast. And you guys got some bonus content because we went a little bit long, but we need that today, right?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, guys, I want to thank you guys for the time here. And I want to thank Fantasy Pros also for lending me two of my favorite people, you two, to take part in the Black Book. And if people want to get their Black Book and see a little special nuggets there from Mr. Tagliere. In fact, he actually did put a whole thing in there, Joe Burrow. So it's in there. It's in the Black Book. And Bobby's stuff is in there as well. So go check it out on Amazon right now. You can get your hard copy. You can get your Kindle version. It'll be on iTunes in a couple of weeks. And thank you to everyone who already got it. Because number one in football in June, that's madness, man. Love you guys. Thank you so much. And this was fun, man. This was good. This is not even work. This is, don't tell everybody. But this is like, I don't know, this is like what it's supposed to be. Every three people getting in here, talking it up like this, really good conversation. This was a blast.
Absolutely. It was a blast. And guys, don't forget to sign up for the giveaways we've got going on right now. You go to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, leave us an honest review, take a screenshot of it to send it to contest@fantasypros.com. And we're giving away a signed DeAndre Hopkins helmet.
Ooh, I want that.
Same. And we're giving away Fielder's Choice vintage leather baseball wallet. You guys are going to love this. Again, you can check out the details at fantasypros.com/contest. All right, and don't forget to order your Omaha Steaks, guys. Get free shipping and free steak cut bacon with select packages when you go to omahasteaks.com and type Fantasy Pros in the search bar to shop for Father's Day today. And also, don't forget to visit fcgoods.com and use the discount code FANTASYPROS, all one word again, at checkout for a special offer. They're going to custom monogram your wallet for free. That's going to save you $25 while you make the perfect gift that much more personal. Again, that's fcgoods.com and the discount code FANTASYPROS. For Joe Pisapia and Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening and enjoy your football.
I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full grate sear zone so you can put more food on the flame. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.